This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. This entire hour, by the way, we will be streaming live on our video feed. All you have to do is text the keyword video to 1-800-465-877. You can go behind the scenes of the show for the first hour, so we'll be doing this until 4 o'clock. You get to see us perform the show live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770 or go to our Twitter feed, twitter.com/JasonRants. I just posted a link so you can watch the show. Watch it on your phone, your desktop, your laptop. You can envision, you just close your eyes, really. I mean, that's the kind of thing about radio. I mean, unless you're in a car, don't do that. Just close your eyes and listen to me, and you can picture me in your own head
doing the show live. You're right there.
Yeah, but if you're not all that creative, text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in King County?
So the father of a Seattle high school student who died from counterfeit pain pills, the father is now speaking out.
This is not part of the plan.
That's Peter Toms. He says his son Jasper was going to be a junior at North Seattle's Ingram High School this year. Unfortunately, he's not going to get that opportunity anymore.
He was a happy kid, and he was looking forward to school, but he was, you know, partying. And unbeknownst to his mom or I, he took a combination of substances, and one of which was a counterfeit pill. He thought that it was a Percocet that he was taking, which is oxycodone, and it was not. It's a counterfeit pill. It was not Percocet at all. In fact, it was benzodiazepine, which is Xanax, and fentanyl.
That's the father talking with our sister station, Cairo Radio. He died after taking that pill, and now the family is left trying to put these pieces back together, feeling broken, feeling sad that they lost someone so close to them.
I actually found him later that evening when I came home. And unfortunately, he had passed away earlier in the morning and was gone by the time I came back. So I found him that way.
So now he is speaking directly to parents. Speaking directly to people who can maybe intervene when something's going on that maybe they've heard about, maybe they suspect. He's urging teenagers to speak up if they see any of their friends taking pills.
I mean, you miss your kid, you know, you miss your family member. This is somebody that you see every day and you talk to and you laugh with and you eat dinner with and you yell at and you get mad at and just everything, you know, all this stuff. And all of a sudden that person is gone. And there's this enormous void, you know, there's this great big hole in our lives where Jasper was once there. And, you know, not an hour goes by now and I don't think about him.
So the question becomes, why is this happening? And the truth of the matter is, these types of things do happen. But this is the third teenager dying of a fentanyl-laced overdose in the King County region. This is the third one who passed away, who won't get to experience their life the way that they were supposed to. And the answer as to why this is happening, I think at least in part, is due to the enabling that's done by very bad, very dangerous policies in this region of not enforcing our drug laws. We have laws on the books right now, drug laws on the books right now, that are completely being ignored. Police are not able to arrest people who are found with apparently low levels, and we'll put those in air quotes, of really significantly dangerous substances, because they know that if they put it in with the King County prosecutor, that it's not actually going to get charged. The prosecutor, Dan Satterberg, who is very close to the issue of opioid abuse, he lost his younger sister to it, he's decided to take on a policy that he believes is compassionate. Because he doesn't believe that throwing people in jail will actually treat their addiction. And in large part, I think he's right. But the problem is, when you come up with this blanket policy, it ends up getting abused. And that's what's happening right now. This is a policy that is being abused. Because drug dealers know about this policy. And so what do? You can ask any cop in Seattle, really Western Washington. Because in a lot of ways, they're dealing with this also in Snohomish County, although their prosecutor is trying to fix that. Right now, if you talk to a cop, that cop will tell you that the drug dealers have evolved. So no longer are they holding a whole bunch of product on them. They're holding less because they know if they get caught with the smaller amounts of product on them, they're unlikely to get charged. Oh, I wasn't dealing. What are you talking about? I wasn't dealing. This is my personal and you can't do anything about it. So they still sell the product. We've created a culture in which they now feel incentivized almost to go ahead and sell this product to people who are addicts, to people who are casual drug users, who maybe otherwise would be incentivized not to make that illegal purchase, thinking, oh, wow, there's a chance and I'm going to get arrested. That chance is no longer really there. That chance is not actually there anymore. And what ends up happening is people feel more enabled than ever to sell product, to take product, knowing there's not really going to be any consequences of facing jail time. And as a result, we have a culture in which teenagers are feeling more comfortable to purchase these drugs that, in this case, were laced with fentanyl, which is incredibly dangerous. This is not going to stop until we get harder on drugs. I'm not saying throw everybody who is caught with any fentanyl-laced pill in jail or heroin in jail or meth in jail. That's not what I believe. But I do think that you should be using jail time as leverage against people who you believe will actually take you up on your offer of resources of drug treatment when faced with the possibility of being put in jail. When you take that leverage away, why would they actually say, okay, I'll get the treatment, when the alternative is they get to go back out into freedom, taking more and more drugs that they're addicted to? Why in the world would anyone just say, oh, okay, I mean, so you're telling me that there are no consequences or I have to go to drug treatment? Oh, okay, then I'll take the no consequences route. Why would they take the drug treatment? And then, of course, you've got the idea of, let's say you go ahead and pop some dude who ends up buying a few pills off of a drug dealer on the streets of Seattle. Well, you know what you used to be able to do? The cops used to be able to do, hey, look, here's the deal. I'm going to arrest you right now. You're going to go to jail unless you give me some details about the drug dealer. They would use the threat of jail time as leverage to get information to go after the bad guy on the street who's responsible for these overdose deaths. But that doesn't exist anymore. And this is a consequence of that kind of lack of enforcement. This is a consequence. You have yet another kid who died. And we're going to continue to have this happening. We're going to continue to push people down this dangerous path of addiction that's going to destroy their families ultimately. It's going to destroy their careers. It's going to destroy their lives. And it's okay, I guess, because we're doing it with compassion in mind. This is the kind of compassionate policy that kills. Because understand that these pain pills, the counterfeit ones, they're circulating here in Seattle.
They say M30 on them. They're light blue in color. And people need to not take them because they are not what they think they are.
When we start to get serious on this, I think we'll see significant data to back up that you can be compassionate and reasonable while also keeping jail time on the table and still get results. That's what I truly believe. Because right now, I don't know how many people can honestly raise their hands and say, yeah, I'm happy with the direction we're going. King County now officially, I believe, has a meth epidemic. We've seen more meth deaths in this region over the last year of full data than we've had seen previously. We have kids dying on our streets. We have homelessness made much, much, much worse because of the opioid epidemic. And that's been happening under the people who have the quote-unquote most compassionate policies ever devised. You have puff pieces in the New York Times we talked about a month ago, puff pieces that claim, oh, you know, we figured out the war on drugs. You didn't know that? Yo, Seattle figured it out. It was driven by ideology, that report. We are in a bad place in this region. And it's now up to you guys listening to change that. You should be putting pressure on politicians to actually enforce the law or at least work better with police agencies to come up with policies that work. You should be making sure that you're actually voting in elections and voting for the right people because Dan Satterberg, Pete Holmes, Seattle City Attorney, they're elected officials. You guys put them in office. And for those of you who care deeply about this issue and don't want it to spread to your neighborhood, for those of you who don't actually live in Seattle, maybe you're listening in Mukilteo or Bellevue or Squim, you know that bad policies spread. It's already spread to Snohomish County, and they're trying to get rid of it. So what are you doing in Seattle to help influence these policies? Are you donating to campaigns, or are you donating your time to help? This is on you. I'm doing what I can. It's now your guy's turn. You got to step up now. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. We are video streaming this entire hour if you want to watch me do the show. I mean, it is a little bit creepy because the cameras are staring right at me and it's really close up and I'm uncomfortable, but I'll sit through this for you at least for the next 45 minutes. Text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770. I have another goal. We have to get 50 people in the live video stream at one point during this next hour, which means everybody listening, all you have to do, just for a few minutes, get into the video stream. If everyone did it, we would hit that goal, and I'll continue maybe even more than an hour. Text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770 or check out the Twitter feed. I've just posted a link, twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So the federal government still doesn't like the rainbow crosswalks that we have in the Seattle area. I believe we have 11. According to Cairo 7 TV, the Federal Highway Administration, the U.S. Department of Transportation, they've come out and sent letters to a whole bunch of cities across the country saying, whoa, 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 what you're doing with these rainbow pride crosswalks is actually dangerous. In fact, we know that the city of Seattle got a letter back in 2015 when this was actually being installed here. SDOT traffic engineer Dongo Chang, he doesn't agree with the assessment coming from the federal government.
We made them very vibrant, so you can't miss their crosswalks.
You can't miss them, these crosswalks. He actually argues the opposite of what the federal government is claiming is happening. It's actually making things safer.
We're seeing a reduction in pedestrian collisions to the point where they're not really happening.
Now, I don't know if that's an honest assessment of why the data is the way that it is, right? I don't know if he's done a look at that particular crosswalk, one of the 11 in Capitol Hill that has rainbow crosswalks versus another one that has the equal amount of foot traffic. I know that when we're talking about a neighborhood like Capitol Hill, you got a lot of people who are walking and there's lots of slow traffic, so that probably plays a role in all of this. But the question is, well, that letter got sent in 2015. Why is Cairo 7 talking about it last night? Why does Q13 have a story on it last night? Well, because the agency just sent a letter to a city in Iowa. The New York Times reports that the Highway Administration said that crosswalk art, quote, diminishes the contrast between the white lines and the pavement, potentially decreasing the effectiveness of the crosswalk markings and the safety of pedestrian traffic. The agency said that if the city wants any federal money for any intersections where the rainbow crosswalks are located, you're going to have to make the changes. So far, that hasn't yet happened in Seattle, hasn't yet happened in Iowa. We don't know if it's going to. But let's be clear, if it happens in Iowa, it's going to likely happen in Washington State. A lot of people like what they stand for, like this resident.
I think for the fact that people are present when they walk in and they like it and they're aware of it, in that way, maybe it is safer.
Yeah, it's, you know what she sounds like, Producer Peyton?
What does she sound like?
An expert.
She does.
I personally don't care. I will say this. I don't find the rainbow crosswalks to be a distraction. I was walking around downtown Seattle last night after a movie, and they had this like dark blue paint between the sidewalk. That was confusing to me. I couldn't even tell it was a crosswalk or a street. That was confusing to me. I do think that we can go a little bit overboard. I don't like the cost. They're the $66,000 to put these rainbow crosswalks up. It's mostly paid for outside of tax dollars, but it's money that could have been spent better. For the most part, people who complain about these things don't like the political message they think it sends. I don't necessarily think it's political, but it's also not apolitical. If you've got data that actually suggests not simply that you believe that the crosswalks will be more dangerous as a result of this, but you have actual data to show, then come to the table. Otherwise, just leave this alone. I don't think this is an issue. There's no reason to have this conversation.
Again, this is the argument where the city is being run so perfectly, the nation's being run so perfectly, that we're going to complain
about
crosswalks.
Are you suggesting that we have other more important and pertinent issues to tackle? Shame on you!
How dare I?
How dare you, sir? Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the East Side?
So this is actually one of those other issues that I think is incredibly important to be focused on instead of rainbow crosswalks. A robbery in Bellevue is now the latest incident to remind us the importance of something called the Safe Banking Act, which on paper sounds so boring, but in reality, Safe Banking Act basically says if you are in a state that allows for the legal sale of marijuana, you get to be able to deal directly with banks. Because under current state law, the way that it classifies marijuana, banks are not able to do any business with specifically these pot shops. Okay? So if that's the case, what ends up happening is like what happened here. Just before midnight, a dude with a gun walks into this Bellevue shop, threatens three employees, this according to the Bellevue police. Two workers ran out of the store, the third one ran to the back of the business. No one was hurt, thankfully, and we don't yet know whether or not anything was stolen. They're still trying to figure that out. But the fact of the matter is, you've got shops like this that are being targeted specifically because they do not do business with banks, which means they don't take credit cards. What does that mean? What's it mean?
Say it means cash.
It means cash.
Cash heavy.
Cash heavy.
Got so much cash.
They got so much cash.
And you know what that means? They get targeted by bad guys with guns trying to rob these places. These are spaces that are legally selling marijuana, and they should be treated like any other business. That's why Congressman Dan Newhouse, Republican from the east side of the state, he was on board with the Safe Banking Act. In fact, every congressperson in Washington, Republican and Democrat alike, all supported the Safe Banking Act.
Different businesses, and it's not addressing illegal marijuana. We're allowing legitimate legal businesses to be able to avail themselves of banking services that every other business can use. And so I think that this makes just a lot of sense.
It does make sense. And it's why Republicans and Democrats have gotten together to support this in the House. So it overwhelmingly passed the House. Now it goes to the Senate. Now, to Peyton's earlier point, there are other issues that are incredibly important that the country is dealing with. I don't expect that this is going to get a vote. But the more states that we have on board with the legalization of marijuana, we should hopefully get a vote on this pretty soon. I sure hope so. Because no community is served by having these businesses that are being targeted by bad guys because of a very bad bill or very bad old law that could very easily be changed. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
So there is an extremely dangerous felon who is out there on the loose. We believe in the Tacoma area. This is a guy who is a convicted rapist who was just released from jail. He's extremely dangerous, and we just released him from jail. So good on all of us. He removed his GPS ankle bracelet. We don't know exactly where he is. He's 41 years old. His name is Ronald Clayton.
We originally arrested him for attempted murder and rape. He had broken into a couple different places and held female victims at gunpoint, raped them. In one incident, he took a ligature and tried to kill one of the victims.
Okay, so sounds like an all-around good dude that we want just hanging out in Tacoma. That's Detective Ed Troyer. He says this guy was released from jail just a few days ago. And get this. This is probably my favorite part of the conversation. He was going to stay at a Tacoma homeless camp. That's where he was going to be released to. But he cut off his ankle bracelet, and we don't know exactly where he is now.
He just got out of prison last week, and that's why we have these registration laws, so we know where you're at, and they had an ankle bracelet on him.
So if you know his whereabouts, you're supposed to contact 911 immediately. He is not someone who you should approach. I've posted a photo of him on our Twitter feed. If you want to check it out, if you're in the general Tacoma area, frankly, everyone should know what this guy looks like. So go to twitter.com/JasonRantz or just text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my Twitter feed. It's like the second post down. You'll see a big photo of what this guy looks like. If you see him, or if you have seen him, immediately call 911. This is a dangerous dude. And by the way, this also highlights the issue that a lot of folks have with these homeless encampments because we don't know exactly who's living in them. Apparently, this dude was going to live there. Text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. You can watch a video stream of the show for the next 30 minutes. Then we're turning it off. We just want 25 more people right now to text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770. Join the actual stream. You can watch it on your phone. The quality is intimidatingly good. I mean, I'm so glad my hair is so amazing because I still need a haircut, but still, I look good. Not going to lie.
I love the little chat. Do you have the chat up on the side?
Yeah.
Oh, this is great. This is...
So I find it distracting, but yeah.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah,
I guess I have a lot less to do than you.
Yeah.
Since, you know, you're the quote-unquote talent.
You're not delivering an amazing monologue. You're just sitting there watching me, listening to me.
And listening to the texters and, you know.
Text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770. Folks are outraged. Outraged, I tell you! Outraged that Ellen DeGeneres is friends with and went to a Cowboys game with President George W. Bush. Oh my God. I can't believe it. And really, not folks aren't really mad. Progressive activists and blue check marks, they're really, really outraged. Videos and photos of the two at the game were posted to Twitter. Bad faith actors got involved. Intolerant activists got involved. They decided to call her out. How could she become friends with someone so awful like George W. Bush? Oh my God, did you know that he's a war criminal? How could you be friends with a war criminal? He's basically like the gazpacho police. It's Gestapo. The gazpacho police. He's a war criminal. He's anti-gay. Ellen, you sold us out. And so today, or yesterday morning on her show, she addressed the controversy directly.
During the game, they showed a shot of George and me laughing together. And so
outrage.
People were upset. They thought, why is a gay Hollywood liberal sitting next to a conservative Republican president? Didn't even notice I'm holding the brand new iPhone 11. And,
okay, that's not that funny of a joke.
But a lot of people were mad, and they did what people do when they're mad. They tweet. And but here's
that's
one tweet
do.
That I loved. This person says, Ellen and George Bush together makes me have faith in America again. I'm friends with George Bush. In fact, I'm friends with a lot of people who don't share the same beliefs that I have. We're all different, and I think that we've forgotten that that's okay that we're all different. For instance, I wish people wouldn't wear fur. I don't like it, but I'm friends with people who wear fur. And I'm friends with people who are furry, as a matter of fact. I have friends who should tweeze more. And I have... But just because I don't agree with someone on everything doesn't mean that I'm not going to be friends with them. When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only the people that think the same way that you do. I mean be kind to everyone.
Good for her. You guys can blame on the left President Trump all you want. You can blame Trump for all the political division that we're experiencing. You can do that all you want. But you guys need to actually look in a mirror. Because I'm seeing way more intolerance coming from the left than I am from the right. Way more intolerance. And it's especially happening online, where a lot of tough guys get to go up and prop themselves up, pretend that they're somehow heroes because they're fighting against literal Nazis in the streets. But really, that's just code for Republicans. They think all Republicans are Nazis. They think that somehow they have been called to heroics, to push back against the intolerant, bigoted, Trump-supporting conservatives, and yet they're the ones acting more fascistic. They're the ones who are acting more intolerant than anybody else. Saul Spady, our morning show host, gets kicked out of a restaurant in Seattle because the server there, the host, didn't like one position he took on homelessness. A position that Saul Spady took because he has compassion. More compassion than that host at that restaurant would ever have in trying to help people get off the streets. But because he is perceived as this evil conservative, he gets kicked out of a restaurant. People are being bullied. They're being shouted down because they hold the same opinion virtually as 50% of this country. Let's not forget that this country is almost evenly divided when it comes to political ideology. You have one side right now showing utter intolerance. How many examples do we have to put out there to show how they're the intolerant ones? Do you see these kinds of massive coordinated efforts on the right to shame, to bully progressives, to kick them out of restaurants, to shout them down, to stop speeches, to spit at them, to get violent at them, to call them Nazis and fascists? Have you seen that coming from the right? Certainly sometimes it comes from the right, but have you seen any major concerted effort? I haven't. I haven't seen a whole bunch of Republicans try to get progressives fired from jobs. In fact, quite the opposite. We're the side that doesn't preach that kind of intolerance. We're the kind of folks who don't want to see people's lives be ruined, people living miserable lives as a result of holding mainstream political opinions. This is dangerous, and it's coming from the left, and they will happily go after their own. Think about what Ellen did. She sat next to George W. Bush at a football game, and they laughed a couple times. Oh, my God. Imagine how conversations in this country would change if both sides were willing to sit at a table and talk to one another. Or, how about this, enjoy each other's company and not talk about politics whatsoever. Now, I don't know about the people who are listening to me right now, because I'm presuming that the vast majority of you actually agree with me, but I'm the type of person, maybe you are too, maybe you're not, I'm the type of person who really doesn't care when someone disagrees with me politically. I do not care. I do not care. I care if they make bad faith arguments with me. I care if they try to bully me because I hold an opinion that they don't have. But simply having a different opinion and being passionate about it, I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I don't take it personally. Including, by the way, positions that they might take that could result in policies that impact me personally. Why is it that folks on the right can do it, but not folks on the left? No, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, at least for those of us who are listening in Washington State, certainly in Western Washington, we're kind of outnumbered, aren't we? Not that many conservatives around here. Certainly depends on where exactly you are in Washington. If you're in Pierce County, Thurston County, you're going to find a lot more. Maybe on the east side of King County, you're going to find some more. But man, I live in Seattle. I'm one of 17 conservatives. And I kind of have to be tolerant of other views. I think generally I would be tolerant anyway, but I have to be. And I'm wondering, especially when we're seeing this kind of stuff on Twitter, I'm wondering if it's a result, this kind of intolerance towards opinions that they disagree with, if it's a result of creating an echo chamber, whether we're talking about living in Seattle surrounded by other people who think exactly like you, never challenging you, or maybe it's because on Twitter where you get to self-select who you follow. You get to decide, I'm only going to surround myself with folks on the left because they're so smart, they're so great, everyone else is bigoted, and you lose the ability to talk to someone of a different political opinion. We talk a lot about the wonders of diversity, multiculturalism, which I agree with. I think we are all better when we have different types of people in our lives, whether that's in our apartment buildings, on our streets, on our homes, in workplaces. I think that we are better equipped, we're well-rounded when we're surrounded by people who are of different backgrounds, socioeconomic, religious, gender, whatever it happens to be, but also ideologically, because it teaches you the importance of actual tolerance. The left doesn't really like that, certainly not here. And this is what happens. You get someone like Ellen, who I disagree with politically. But you get someone like Ellen who's going to get torn down by vicious people with blue check marks next to their names on Twitter because she did something tolerant and compassionate and friendly and human. Think about what this story says about the culture right now in this country. It's not President Trump's doing. Trump didn't do this. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. If you text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a live video stream so you can watch the remainder of this hour on your computer or on your phone. Text video to 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show live in the Online Trading Academy studio. If we get 10 more live video views within the next 10 minutes, I'll keep on the camera until 4:15. Text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770. Producer Peyton's in the chat room. He's conversing with the folks who are kissing his backside, pretending he's doing a great job.
These are my people.
While not focusing at all on me. Text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770. The Trump administration this morning blocked a deposition that was supposed to take place in front of a House panel between them and U.S. Ambassador to the European Union. His name is Gordon Sondland. The ambassador wanted to testify, according to a statement he put out. He planned on testifying today, which generally means there's nothing to hide, or he doesn't think there's anything to hide. But the State Department decided to step in for two reasons. Number one, they said, okay, look, the Democrats here are abusing their power. They're going directly to the employees. They're not going through the State Department, which is how they're supposed to do it. This is harassment. This is intimidation. This is the wrong way to do it. That's number one. I'm a little less moved by that. I get it, but I'm not as moved by that than I am by point number two. The most meaningful reason why they've decided to block this is the Democrats are actively harassing this administration. This is not a good faith effort. They announced very, very quickly after they took control of the House that they will investigate. They will look for things that the president is doing that they can exploit to help them win back the White House in 2020. They've announced that as their intent long ago. This is a sham process. This is not a fair process. Why in the world would the Trump administration make it easier for the Democrats? Because from a strategic standpoint, you say, no, we're not going to let you. And let the Democrats fight really, really hard. They end up getting their deposition of Sondland, and then they get nothing. Because it's kind of the way they did last week, which is why some of these selected interviews are being done in private, and then they're silent after them, like the Volcker one. They're silent after it because they're not getting anything. Representative Matt Gaetz, a Republican in Florida, said this.
What we see in this impeachment is a kangaroo court, and Chairman Schiff is acting like a malicious Captain Kangaroo.
Well, I mean, your first part made sense. Captain Kangaroo is not from Kangaroo Court. The Kangaroo Court is a concept, right? Captain Kangaroo is a kid's
TV show.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's mixing up metaphor. But I generally agree with him that this is not a fair process. And, of course, Adam Schiff is responding the exact way you expect.
The failure to produce this witness, the failure to produce these documents, we consider,
what do you consider bad, right?
Yet additional strong evidence of obstruction of the constitutional functions of Congress, a co-equal branch of government.
So what he just said there is demonstrably untrue. This is not any evidence of obstruction. This is the equivalent of someone who doesn't quite understand how any legal proceeding actually works. And they say, oh, well, he's doing this because they're hiding something. No, I think it's very clear what they're doing. Now, speaking of evidence, Adam Schiff said he had evidence of Russian collusion. He had it. He has it right now. He refuses to push it into the spotlight. He refuses to tell us what that evidence actually is. That seems problematic because you're a liar.
There are four issues that we are looking at least four issues that we are looking at, all that go to the heart of our national security.
Oh, now they care about national security, by the way. Continue.
And by preventing us from hearing from this witness and obtaining these documents, the president and secretary of state are taking actions that prevent us from getting the facts needed to protect the nation's security.
Now, to be fair to Adam Schiff, I do want to be fair to Representative Schiff. Because he's saying this is all about national security. This is all about transparency. This is all about them doing their job. To be fair to Adam Schiff, he treated the Obama administration the exact same way that he's currently treating the Trump administration. Fine, there was that one instance when Attorney General Eric Holder refused to provide actual subpoenaed Fast and Furious documents, and they were fine with that. Push that. Okay, and also Lois Lerner refused to testify on IRS targeting, and the Democrats didn't have anything to say about that. But other than that, he's been treating Trump the same way as he treated Obama, although there was that Treasury official blocked from testifying about Obamacare subsidies. Then there was the White House refusing to allow the political director of the White House Office of Political Strategy and Outreach to testify. So other than that, they're treating him exactly the same way they treated Obama. Oh, I forgot the Obama administration refused to provide subpoenaed Solyndra documents with that scandal that we're pretending wasn't a scandal. So other than all of those instances, they're being treated exactly the same. Oh, I've got a longer list of things that they're acting out as hypocrites on.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh.
This is nonsense. They have created a system in which they're not going to follow their own rules. Then they get mad that the Trump administration is not making this easy on them. The left does it. The right does it. This is how politics works. And that's an unfortunate reality. Because the truth of the matter is, if anything that's happening is illegal and does actually endanger our national security, I want to know about it. I don't care if Trump's in the White House. He doesn't get to break the law. The problem is when you say over and over and over and over again and then over again some more that President Trump is a dictator who is lawless, who doesn't care about the system of government, who's completely ruining and dismantling democracy. When you say that over and over and over again, I tend not to believe what it is you're saying. Because hyperbole kind of works, but not when you do it every moment of every day. These folks are acting in bad faith. They're doing it because they understand that the more they can get the media to talk about this, the better it looks for whomever the Democratic nominee is going to be. Now, I think that that is flawed thinking. You can go ahead and put Elizabeth Warren out there as your nominee. She's going to get demolished. Because at its core, this country stands against socialism. It doesn't matter what some blue check marks on Twitter say. It doesn't matter what activists within the party say. Elizabeth Warren's never going to be the president because she's a socialist. Bernie Sanders is never going to be the president because he's too old and a socialist. Joe Biden, maybe. I think the Ukraine stuff with his son severely weakened him. But he's still perceived as more moderate and certainly not perceived as a socialist. He's got a shot. So yes, it depends on who they put up there. But if they think they're just going to throw up anyone because they're going to talk about impeachment over and over and over and over again until they can't talk about it anymore, sorry, it's not going to work. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH.